This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Saturday today, and I had just finished visiting my dad, heading home at this point. Been off this week, we're out in Vegas, had a lovely time. Actually, it was a little bit of a whirlwind because I think I mentioned last week that I was off to see my brother-in-law, retire from the Army, so that was lovely, and et cetera, et cetera. We were out in Vegas this week for a little vacation. At the same time, I still don't have the books live yet, the files live on kdp.amazon.com. Oh. Tomorrow will be 2 weeks. 2 weeks since I uploaded those files. They still aren't live. Granted, I was gone for a few days and away from the email that I needed to be able to get them to recognize my stuff, but I sent them an email last Monday. It was interesting because when I had called them several days before that, I got right through to an operator. This was on a Monday morning, close to first thing. I mean, they open at 6 Pacific time, and I called them 8-ish, 9-ish. It was going to be a half hour before I got through, according to their little counter thing. And so I gave that up, sent them an email, heard back. The support person said, I'm not really sure, because I had told them what's going on is that I've uploaded my files just like I did for CreateSpace, formatted them all the same way, the previewer said great, everything looks good, except I kept getting these error messages that would say, well, your book details, your title, subtitle that you enter don't match, and they have to match. So I'd go back and I made some change. It could not get them to accept it. So I wrote them about this, and they said, well, we put you on the call list, and, you know, so just give us a call, and we'll get this worked out. But, of course, so I wrote them again, the whole thing. I heard back. The support person said, I'm not really sure about this. I'm going to have to check with the technical people, but I will have you an answer by close of day on Friday. This was Monday. I will have an answer for you by close of day on Friday. I walked upstairs and I told my wife, I said, yeah, kdp.amazon.com is in the thick of it at this point. They did a Big Bang implementation and they moved all their authors over in one fell swoop, or at least as close as they could get to one fell swoop, and they are in it deep now. They've got some problems getting books authorized, and they are in it deep. So, there you go. I'll get back with you on Friday. Okay. Meanwhile, I did order just unpublished draft copies, so I got them sent out today. They have this big, ugly, not-for-resale banner on them, which isn't great, but hey, you know. At least they're books and they're readable. So that's what's important. Anyways, so that's what I was doing today. Let me back up. I'm a little scatterbrained this morning because I'm a little tired. It was a long week. And then we had an exciting event on the end of it. So anyways, we flew out for Vegas on Monday. We had a lovely time. We went to see some shows. Went to see Tape Face. Went to see Piff the Magic Dragon. It was fun. Everything seemed to be going fine. You know, it was hot. It was 98, 99, 100 degrees the whole time we were out there. And I was drinking water all along, and I wasn't really paying attention to what Lynette was doing, which maybe I should have, because it's a real dry heat. And it's really, I think, easy to get dehydrated because you don't realize how dry the heat is. You're not really even feeling yourself sweat because it's evaporating so quick. So Thursday night, night before last, I was planning on getting in bed about 8 o'clock Pacific time, which is 10 o'clock Central time, so that's my normal bedtime anyways, because we needed to get up at 5:30 Pacific time, which is just 7:30 Central time, because our plane was leaving at 8:10 Pacific time. So, you know, but plenty of time for this, plenty of time for that. So for the last meal, we went down to Wahlburgers, because Nat was really kind of, you know, wanting a Wahlburgers before we went. And she just got the small hamburger with the fries, and I got their chicken sandwich, and yada, yada, yada. So we ate as we were walking back. She was saying, yeah, I'm having trouble breathing. She said, you know, we'll just go slow. I said, that's fine. So we made it back to in the vicinity of the Paris, and she said, I am really feeling nauseated. I said, okay. So we kind of slowed down some more and just kind of took it. And she finally said, I am not feeling, something is wrong. I'm not feeling well. She said her chest was constricted. It was hard for her to breathe. Eventually, she did break out in cold sweats. She was nauseated. She couldn't stand up. So we made it inside the Paris, and she was leaning against me for a while, and then she sat, and finally she laid down, and we were talking, and I said, sweetie, do I need to call 911? And she finally said, yeah, I think you better call 911. So I called 911. We had a big adventure even getting the ambulance there, because they have to park outside and then they have to go in and then security has to escort them and blah, 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 blah. And at the time, Lynette went back into the bathroom, and so they actually went into the women's bathroom, and all these women came piling out because they didn't know what was going on. And oh man. But they did all the workup for cardiac stuff. They couldn't find anything wrong terms of cardiac. They did CAT scan, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's gonna be a bill coming out of this one, but that's okay. That's all right, you know. The doctor finally came in around, I don't know, it was 12 midnight-ish Pacific time. And he said, well, all the heart workup comes back negative. You didn't have a heart attack, he said, but I really think you need a stress test. So he said, what I'm saying is I'd like to admit you to the hospital so that we can do a stress test on you. He said, I understand that you're leaving tomorrow morning, but that's what I'd like to do. If you would like to do something else, you can take yourself voluntarily out of my care and you can leave. And Lynette said, I want to leave because I want to go home. He said, well, I'd recommend you talk to your doctor. So anyway, so we, you know, things had eased down enough that we eventually got to sleep about 1 a.m. Pacific time. And then I was back up about 5 o'clock. I was going to sleep on the plane, but I got into a really good conversation with the guy sitting next to me. We talked for 3 hours all the way back in. We're going to get together for breakfast at some point and talk some more. So I didn't get any sleep then, and then I just kind of stayed up. I finally gave out about 9 o'clock last night and slept till about 7 o'clock this morning, but I'm still a little woozy. But that's okay. Step at a time, step at a time. I can honestly say through the whole thing, I was not anxious and nervous and all that kind of stuff. I just, you know, was thinking, okay, well, there's a possibility we may need a hotel for another night. There's a possibility we may need to stay for a couple of days. Possibility I may need to call work and tell them, you know, hold off. As it turns out, none of that stuff happens because you never know what's going to happen. Lynette is home. She has an appointment with her doctor on Wednesday. She is doing better. She still has a headache, and that continuing headache has been interesting. The young lady who lives with us, she was saying that the symptoms sounded very similar to what her sister had had when she had heat stroke. And then that got me thinking, and almost liter size bottles of water that I was downing. But she was just kind of drinking coffee mostly, which is a diuretic. So that's not what you want when you're trying to stave off dehydration. And I'm just wondering if in fact she got herself dehydrated and then it just kept building and building until finally Thursday night it just hit. Because the young lady who lives with us, she said that's the way it was with her sister. She said her sister felt fine, and then all of a sudden, wham, you know, nausea, can't get your breath, cold sweats, etc., etc. So we'll see. We'll see what the doctor says, and we'll go from there. Anyways, so of course, the other big thing this week was the hearings. The hearings, the Kavanaugh/Ford/Kavanaugh, however you want to say it, hearings. And I got to tell you, I didn't want to do any notes for this because the chances are if I don't have any notes and I talk about this, I'm going to make a mistake. And frankly, that's okay. Because I think making a mistake and the allowance for people to make mistakes is kind of at the heart of this. So anything that I'm about to say, you know, I may look back on it a year from now, 2 years from now, 10 years from now, and I might say, yeah, that's not how I think now and how I feel now. Because that's called growth. And that's a quality of life. You know, if you aren't growing, if you aren't learning, if you aren't changing and thinking and considering becoming more mature, that's not good. And the first thing, obviously, I would like to say about this whole Kavanaugh thing is that we're talking about an incident that happened 36 years ago between teenagers who had access to alcohol. Right there, that's a bad idea. Bad idea, period. I'm not justifying anyone's behavior, but teenagers alcohol is a bad mix. I had a friend once who was astonished that he had lived a very liberal lifestyle and, as I put it, lived deep within the bosom of grace. Okay, I mean, this was a guy who had sown his wild oats, hadn't really necessarily stopped sowing his wild oats, did name Christ, but you know, lived very quote-unquote liberally. So, and his viewpoint, he was astonished when he would say, so these kids in some of these Christian youth groups, like the guys don't seem to know what to do with a girl, and the girls don't seem to know what to do with the guys. And he said, you know, my day and age, he said, that never happened. You basically just got some young people together and, you know, got a little alcohol in there, and one thing led to another, and, you know, they figured it out. Okay. Which, obviously, in my viewpoint now, there's a whole lot of overtones in that aren't even close to being respectful and being fair to both of the genders. That type of an approach is highly weighted towards men, because that type of an environment works great for men. When for men, that type of an environment means that their lust is amplified, and it makes them more reckless than they already are. And for women, it means their inhibitions are curbed and it makes them more acceptable to advances and makes them more acceptable to not regarding the consequences of what they might do. And it's just a bad idea. And yet you find over and over the starlets of the world often will speak of how much they love wine and how much they love drinking and how, because it is what that's doing is that's it's suppressing all those anxieties that they're dealing with, well, not dealing with. And of course, wine is an escape for that. But it does make them vulnerable. So, you know, you better make sure you're in a controlled environment. And when you're teenagers and you're drinking a lot of alcohol, that's not a controlled environment. That's a bad idea. Having said all that, it's 36 years ago. And so we were faced with a prospect of a testimony about an incident where many of the details had disappeared, but all that could be said with 100% certainty, quotes, 100% certainty, was that Brent Kavanaugh was the person who assaulted her, Dr. Ford. And then I was quite surprised, as many were, by Brent Kavanaugh's response and the emotional nature of that response. You know, but the fact of the matter is, no matter what Dr. Ford said, you are going to have people who are going to be picking apart her testimony and just saying ridiculous things about her and her testimony. Just like you're going to have, no matter what Brent Kavanaugh said, you're going to have people picking apart his testimony and saying ridiculous things about his testimony. And, you know, honestly, I have to agree with Brett Kavanaugh's analysis that this was a circus. I mean, it really is very sad. It's just very, very sad. And I have been saddened by the fact that I have seen things among my Facebook friends where they have found ways to pick at Dr. Ford's testimony. You know, putting up pictures and saying, does this look like the face of someone who's traumatized? And, you know, catching her at certain moments when she's smiling. And I just shake my head and I think, that is not helpful. It's just not helpful. And then someone else is saying, yeah, we need a full FBI investigation. We should pull all of her records and see if she's, when she was paid off by the Democrats. It's like, not helpful, not helpful. You know, and then, of course, one of the articles that came out when it came to Brent Kavanaugh is, well, do we really want an angry, you know, emotional person on the bench of the Supreme Court? Which, of course, up to this point, he had not been, but his family had been attacked for 2 weeks. And, you know, not helpful. It's just not helpful. And then, of course, Bill, I don't know, the guy who has his own little politically, used to be called politically incorrect, maybe it's Bill, I can't even remember his last name. And so then he was making the claim that Brent Kavanaugh was just an actor, and that whole thing with, well, my 10-year-old asked to pray for him, that's all just fake, and it's all just because in this environment, it doesn't matter what anyone says. All that's important is that I find some way to spin this so that my side wins. And that's flesh. It's flesh up and down. its flesh and its destruction up and down. And it's just really sad to see. And it's sad to see that both of these people, Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, have been drugged through this. But beyond all that, the other thing that I thought about this week as I kind of watched all this was the fact that Jordan Peterson has been saying for some time that the difference between the right and the left, and I thought it was an interesting observation, the difference between the right and the left is that the right seems to be willing to call out those who go too far to the right. That when they get into fascism and racism and those kind of stuff, the more moderate rights look at them and say, yeah, you don't speak for us. We don't, you, that is not who we are. And there's a value in that, because in whatever ideology you embrace, it's going to be embraced at different levels by different people. And so if you don't have some kind of centering mechanism, it can, any ideology can go off the rails. You know, if you don't have some, because there will always be a spectrum of how much people embrace any ideology and how far they take it. And you really need people to say, yeah, too much. And yet, on the left, the ideology has gotten more and more rancorous, and the application of what was political correctness and now is really better characterized as identity politics and equity politics and those types of things. It's better characterized as what the right would call the oppression Olympics, trying to figure out who's more oppressed, and that their value then is based on how oppressed they are. You know, there doesn't seem to be a boundary over on the left side that the more moderate left stick up their hands and say, wait a minute, just hang on. And I think this week, as I was watching all of this, I thought, you know, it seems to me that this is a pretty good candidate to say, wait a minute, hold on. I mean, certainly the suppression of free speech, given that it is one of the founding principles of our country. Certainly, when you have young people on college campuses that are saying, we don't believe in free speech. Free speech is just hate speech. Free speech is used to oppress people, and we don't like free speech, and therefore we think free speech should be controlled, which is part of the whole movement. That should be enough. I think that that well-meaning, moderate people on the left should raise their hand and say, yeah, you're too far. You're done. We're not a part of you. But I think also in that camp should be the idea of, we have in this country, albeit a flawed, it is flawed, a flawed justice system that is not equally applied to all people. It is flawed. There's no question about that. But to just decide that all of the major principle of our justice system should be abolished without having anything to replace it, that should be too far as well. So the presumption that you are innocent until proven guilty, and that you were proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Once you take those building blocks out of any sort of a system where you're requiring people to pay for the consequences of their actions, that's not good. It's That is not good, because then what you end up with without that is the Salem witch trials, where all you need is for someone just to say, well, they're a witch too, and then, you know. And that's what I felt like I've been watching for these last couple of weeks. And I know, I don't know, I am aware of the fact that there are many, many women who have not been believed when they attempted to give testimony against rapists and against molesters. I am aware that there are many women who have been treated in unjust ways by the justice system when they were attempting to find some relief from their suffering that was inflicted by men. I am aware of that. I am also aware that we have made progress in those spheres. And what we appear to have at this point is people who have decided that the entire system is irredeemable, and that what we should replace our free speech and our innocent until proven guilty, and then, you know, subjected to a jury of his peers and convicted beyond a reasonable doubt, it appears that what all that is supposed to be replaced by is whatever an oppressed person says, it must be the truth. Even though, well, that's it. All an oppressed person has to do is raise their hand and say, so-and-so did this, or this is what my experience is. And memory then becomes the only thing that's necessary. And it doesn't matter what anyone else says. And in fact, whatever the oppressor says should be completely ignored. And really, the oppressor, quote-unquote oppressor, should not even be allowed to speak. I can tell you right now, I don't know what happened 36 years ago. There's only a few people who know what happened 36 years ago. But I can tell you confidently that if we dismantle the jurisprudence system, if we throw away free speech, if we decide that we don't believe innocent until proven guilty, or by a trial of a person by their peers under the assumption that you are going to be innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, that's going to descend very quickly into tribalism, even more than it is. And it's going to descend into physical tribalism, not just shouting and railing and shaking fists. It's going to descend into physical tribalism. And when that happens, that's going to be very interesting to see what, because that is a bad road. And all of this name-calling and all of these accusations and all of we should just believe people who are oppressed, and the oppressor isn't allowed to say anything, and they just have to stand there and be accused, and then they're guilty, and then they have to suffer the consequences. Because they're the oppressor. I will just say that, as a matter of course, and in general, oppressors typically, as defined by identity politics, the people who are the oppressors typically are in more power. Typically are quote-unquote more ruthless. And whatever progress has been made, if groups of tribes begin to hunker down and splinter apart, yeah, that is not good. It is just not good. And when I see articles that misquote, that only take pieces of the facts to prove their points, that seem to be written just to be incendiary, wow, that's really interesting. I've already been touched. Just a second, I'm going to pick up my phone. Oh, yeah, sorry for the bad sound, by the way, because I've just been doing... Oh, hey, I've already been talking for half an hour. Okay, I have to quit. You know, it's just very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see. So sorry, no notes this week, just ramblings. But this really is one of those defining moments. I mean, the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas thing was a defining moment. I think this really is a defining moment, and it highlights just how divisive things have become in this country. And I think it highlights just how much we need to just take a breath and get back to what would be more spirit-like principles, recognizing that we all have flesh within us, recognizing that we all make mistakes, recognizing that we all have the capacity to grow, recognizing that anger is destruction, that mercy and grace and gentleness and attempted understanding and forgiveness are the paths to life. Because unfortunately, I didn't really see much of any of those things this week. And because of that, it's all flesh and it's all destruction, when really what we really need here is gentleness and kindness and meekness and forgiveness and grace and mercy. We need agape. I'm not going to say love, because that has been a trivialized term. We need understanding of each other and gentleness. And, you know, if I've said some things that have offended any of you, I apologize for that. But I'm just a guy trying to wander on my merry way. And I'll have to tell you that a lot of the stuff I saw this week just makes me very sad. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.